This project is called CapTour, or however you want to pronounce it more conveniently. It is trying to get captions off of VHS tapes, since there aren't really that many more analog signals that are out there. Funny enough, drone cameras still output NTSC. But anyway, so here's the description of the talk, which took me longer than I thought to actually get into words, but every word is meaningful. I did choose on purpose to try and put in as many words that GPT uses, like overuses, but I already talk like this. I already say delve. You know, like it's normal, but anyway. So, what are the captions? It's text on screen. You can turn them on or off if they're closed captions, which is, if they're open, it's usually hard matted or projected, such as at an opera, or New York City actually has a law about open captions on movies, and there's some percentage that have to be there. In the US, we call subtitles for these. If there's like words in other languages, you can still hear it, but you might not understand it. Sometimes for other languages, they'll just burn it into the image. But in other countries, they don't make a distinction between subtitles and captions. It's all just the same. So the standard 608, don't remember what those means, but those are the line 21 vertical blanking interval caption standard. It is just above the visual area on an analog television signal. In DVDs and Blu-rays, the captions are actually images. They're not binary text type data, although I don't think anyone has used that creatively. Usually it's just images that they can put whatever language they want. They don't have to care about binary formats or Unicode, things like that. But it's a picture. Somebody should make, like fun drawings or something. Instead, I've only seen text, but whatever. So I'm sort of interested in accessibility in sort of an abstract way, but if you hurt your arm and you have to put it in a sling, you will appreciate being able to type with one hand, or now you have to switch your mouse buttons or something like the or other sorts of input. Whatever, you if you live long enough, you will become disabled in some way. And I know, sounds terrible, beats the alternative, but it would be nice if the world has a place for you when you get older. There have been a few articles written, like, why is everyone using captions? The current flat panel TVs don't always have the best speakers. Sometimes people are mixing things for like cinematic, wide range, and the dialogue gets all the dialogue gets a little muddled. So one interesting thing that I came across, archive.org has a database of searchable TV clips. I don't know how they captured that. Apparently certain intelligence and monitoring services have stuff that monitors what's going on different countries' TV broadcasts. When I say transfer to other visual media, mostly I mean, my screenshots are done by watching TV and then holding my phone up. If you watch YouTube with the captions on, sometimes people will put, some fun Unicode stuff for, sound effects. They'll make it, crazy looking, or they will put little notes like, hey, say where you're from, whatever. Also something that I found very useful, I don't know if MTV plays music videos anymore, even saying that is 20 years out of date, but the music videos would often have captions on them, and so you'd have accurate song lyrics. I guess one sort of more sentimental thing is that people put a lot of work into getting these captions to you. It is an accessibility issue too, but if we can, why not? Why not check them out? Why not preserve them, capture them? As I also say, there's a lot of stuff that you get for free by being digital. So VHS is clunky, it's mechanical, it's a cassette. It's got a bunch of parts. You know, if you're lucky that your signal is good when it comes in, you'll have a good recording, but they can wear out, et cetera, et cetera. I hope I didn't forget anything on the fifth slide already, but this is sort of an interesting thing that I thought of, is that the captions are sort of the first digital incursion into an analog space. So they're just kind of hanging out above the visual picture area. And, you know, eventually people use them and things like that. But it's digital, went into the TVs, it became part of standards, became part of laws, and we just kind of went with it. So because it's digital, you can just do some thresholding or whatever on the signal. And even though your video might not be coming in great, the captions might still survive a little bit. This is great. 7 minutes in and I'm already tired of talking because I was telling everybody about this project for the past like 2-3 weeks. But anyway, so here's a, I know. The great thing is you only need to listen to it once. But so there was an experiment with captioning Julia Child, the French chef. It was successful. At this point, I think it was still a black and white program. I could be wrong. But you know, people who may not want to have the volume on or can't hear, maybe they want to cook as well. But the complaints were a little bit weird, saying like, oh, it'll burn out the picture tube faster, or, you know, it's distracting to people who can hear. Just very, very strange complaints that, that I came across. But 1973, ABC, and ABC seems to be at the forefront of this. They seem to be early adopters of the Line 21 standard. And they just sort of like keep improving it and go all in with it. But they were rebroadcasting the news with a 5-hour delay, but with captions included now. WETA, I forget where that is. DC? Okay. It's not WBGH. Yep. Is that more or less esoteric than knowing area codes? interesting. The only one that I remember is WPVI for Philadelphia 6, and they are still on UHF low channel 6. But anyway, so in 1976, the FCC reserves this part of the caption, part of the television signal line 21 for captioning use. And in 1979, the National Captioning Institute was founded, and it was a little bit funny to come across this person's name. Also, I just learned it's pronounced Okrand, but does anyone recognize him? Has anyone seen Star Trek? So he is the one who developed, I think, Vulcan first for a few lines, but then mostly Klingon for Star Trek II and III, which, I mean, he's a linguist, but I did not expect him to show up, you know, here in 1979 as I'm researching this. But in March of 1980, most of the sources say that this is when the captions, like, officially began. And CBS, for whatever reason, they wanted teletext. They were kind of pushing it. They were like, I found a New York Times article, I may have linked it, where in 1983, they're like rolling out teletext, and like no one else in the US is on board with this. But anyway, so this is also funny to come across. In 1978, CIA decides that they need a fast way to transcribe audio. There was enough demand that this company called Stenocomp was made. They eventually went out of business, but all their assets or technology or whatever. And the big innovation is that you can connect it to a mini computer. So you can actually do much faster turnaround for things like that. In 1980, Sears sells the first CC decoder boxes. I don't remember the model number. but they were expensive. They hooked up in line and displayed on the television afterwards. The first real-time captioning, which again, I didn't think about it, but no, they used the same stenographer keyboard that a court reporter does. The National Captioning Institute performs real-time captioning of the Academy Awards in real time as it's being broadcast. The 1980s, it just basically goes everywhere. In the 1990s, the Decoder Circuitry Act and the Americans with Disabilities basically made sure that this capability was in all televisions that were sold, I think over 13 inches or something like that. 1996, Telecommunications Act, you might be familiar with it for other reasons, but this has the V-chip, which no one has a good word for what that is except for violence. Clearly it is a violence chip. But this uses the extended data service, which is also on line 21, but slightly different from the captions. And the extended data service is what is sometimes there's an extended data service packet for when commercials are playing, and TiVo used that to automatically cut them out. It's a little bit weird to think that TiVo came before digital, even though it was a Linux machine. But because PBS stations did not have commercials, they would use the XDS packets to set your clock. So this would show up on your VCR every now and then. It might take like 1 to 5 minutes for it to receive the right packet, but one more thing that you don't need to worry about. And yes, here's CBS in 1983. Just keep going here. But, and then there's a podcast about when captions go wrong, but I'm not going to cover that too much. If they knew what was going to be captioned, they would set up their own customized dictionary for the stenographer. One of the articles I was reading, they were set to do NFL games, and for whatever reason, all the players and the coaches and all the teams, there were 14 different people with some variation of Daryl. And so they had to figure out how to get that correct every time. So one of the things that sort of sparked this investigation on the Text One channel every now and then would be this thing. I'm going to show you one of them in a bit, but it shows up. It says, "Oh, would you like to join the Caption Club?" Which seems like a very strange thing, like to be just putting out there. But also, there's almost no information about it online. I was reading one of the articles that I link later, and it turns out it's really more of a sponsorship type thing. They're not sending you stuff and scripts and whatnot, but it was just weird. It's just like, here, send some mail to our nondescript office in Falls Church, Virginia. And now the National Captioning Institute is in Chantilly, but there are a lot of sources for these captions if you need your program done. The VHS tape will capture the entire television signal, and that's why we have it available for us. All right, so this is slide 10. I'm 15 minutes in. I have 45 slides. We'll see. All right. Anyway, so most of the time you turn on captions, it's just the closed caption one channel, but these other channels were used for things like news feeds, program schedules, other captioned programming, things like that. It's there. It's data. We may as well capture it if we can. And we might find something interesting. I don't know. I would not have thought that the funeral for Indira Gandhi was going on at the same time as the 1984 presidential elections. This is a good article that just goes over the binary format, just in case. So part of, I don't intend to get hit by a bus, but I hope that there's enough information here. If you need to, you can reverse engineer or continue this or go off in your own direction. things like that. So this was an interesting article that, you know, talked about the CIA again, which was sort of a surprise but made sense. I didn't put a picture on here, but this describes how the Steno keyboard works, and it sort of explains when you see more, when you see an error, like, ah, I know how that error happened. But I also watch watch Jason Scott's talk, I mentioned teletext. Just wanted for completeness, these two links have archives of teletext that have been recovered from home recordings, things like that. I haven't gone on that too much, but so here's one video that's really good, and I think he messes with the TV a bit so that the vertical blanking and the horizontal are in the middle of the screen, and so you can actually see what the signal looks like that is not usually displayed. One of the strange things about doing research, aside from not knowing where you are or what, you know, how far you are, or if you're near completion or you're just getting deeper and deeper, I just found this random guy. He, you know, pandemic started. All right, we're gonna do Plague Doctor. We're gonna talk about the, you know, this is part two of the composite TV signal. So this is actually pretty good, and I understood a little bit more how it knows, like, when is the frame done, how do you start over again, things like that. I don't have any history about this, but it didn't take them too long, probably, to notice, hey, we can sell sponsorship rights for this. So General Hospital gets sponsored by John. That's a surprise. Here's I know this is, some people recognize this person, but only if you're old. So here we go. Unequivocally, may not have been in the prepared database. They tried it again, and nope, same, you know, it didn't solve to a word. But there are open source libraries for doing stenography. Plover is one that's popular, and for whatever reason, you know, the combination of cording of the keyboard is called a theory, and there are various different strategies for getting your thing going. But so this is all on one tape. This is during the same ABC News segment. I did not plan this, but you know, this is what was on the tape. So closed caption one has the actual dialogue. We have Britt Hume, if you want to know how long ago that was. He was at ABC for 23 years. Here is Sam Donaldson in his famous hair, but this is on the text one caption channel. And then on the text two channel, it has, you know, a completely different set of programming. So it's and these are all in the line 21. They're differentiated by various parody bits and things like that. But so this is sort of the start of the mystery. And like literally before this morning, I did not realize it was a sponsorship. I thought that like they sent you a package of something. But this is on the Text One caption channel, which, you know, most people would have no reason to be looking at. The other interesting thing is some of the tapes, if you go to the Text Two channel, it just says, hey, this is a test. You probably want Text One. The other great thing about looking at old tapes is you find strange shows that you didn't really watch. But this is the fifth to last episode of 90210. I think she just got a Palm Pilot. It's a little bit uncomfortable situation because he's the business partner, but whatever. That's probably why I didn't watch 90210. But I will say, though, not watching the shows, but they had a thing, you know, they had a little bumper. It's like, oh, last four episodes, and they had Moby Porcelain on one of them, which I listened to Moby a lot in high school, and they had Madonna's Take a Bow, not as much, but, you know, like, I have not thought about these shows in 20 years. I may not have thought about those songs, but, like, oh, there it is, having an emotional reaction. So it's a little bit, strange, but this is, as the kids today say, you know, take you on a feels trip. But I did not expect, right? This is just a line of dialogue, but I happened to take the picture. So, and you can sort of see at the top that is some caption-like data, or it might be extended data service, or it might be time code or something. But you turn off overscan. And yes, I got a great deal on a 4K TV that had analog in, so I'm watching VHS tapes on a 4K TV. But the screenshots look great. Here's one of the companies, so they usually put their name at the end. I haven't cared to notice when people started using domains, but this is one of the companies that you could use to get your show captioned. This one did not have any captions because it was recorded off of Russian broadcast television to a DVD and then put on a VHS tape in the United States. I'm including it here because it's bizarre and ridiculous and I don't speak Russian. But, so I didn't quite realize this until later, but maybe you don't want the person who is around murders all the time to be selling you medicine. But it's also strange to be like, you're in a store and suddenly you're talking with someone who is in their house. And here we have West Coast Hellman's. Thankfully it has the same number of syllables. Ancient phones that were, you know, amazing at the time. I guess Adidas is out, Gap is in. And you know, this, I don't know if this is hilarious or a travesty, but this is a Target ad and they had a whole new lyrics for the song. And you know, they had a whole Libby's Diner set up. Like, never encountered this, but here it is. You also get movie trailers for things that just bombed. No one talks about them, but you know, they're enthusiastic about the movie trailer as they're making it. So here I'm thinking, sometimes dangerous, but you know, the TVs have decoders for the captions. You can switch to, you know, text one if you want, text two. We have, you know, these analog TV converters to HDMI. They're $15. I broke apart more than one of them. Disappointed both times, but you know, always the worst question. How hard can this be? So, just I guess as an aside, the more I did research, some more things that I came across. This VHS decode is a spin-off of the Laserdisc decoder that was used for the, I think, UK government Domesday book, like whatever that whole thing was, like a record. Like a recording record, like a census and things like that. And they put it on Laserdisc, which is not great if you don't have a Laserdisc player. Other interesting thing, Laserdisc is analog video, but digital audio. So there's an Arduino Shield, and there's a project to sort of make a word cloud over all the captions that you get. And then this, I don't have any pictures for it, but this was somebody's project. They used a digital line splitter, and then they sampled the audio, the analog signal, and they pulled out the captions that way. But it looks kind of janky. I probably would mess it up, but when you see what I built later, I'm very happy it did not explode. But so here's an adapter. You know, one of these chips handles translating to HDMI, one of them is the audio, one of them is the analog video. It's a very bad picture here, but this is all from Macro Silicon. I cannot find data sheets. Don't know if I want to. They're cheap, but like I don't know what you can do with it. So kept looking. Texas Instruments, they have a bunch of analog decoders. Motorola has a bunch of analog decoders, but they're like this. There's just way too many pins. They're way too fine. I don't want to deal with that. Like, let's keep looking, see if there's something that, you know, that will not drive us insane. So, I came across this one. This is Here's my sort of live demo. If you know, you don't need to know metric, but this chip is 5 by 5 millimeters. So this is the breakout board that the chip will fit on. So that's how big it is. But it has everything that we want. And in fact, if you want to, you could, and you have the right hardware, but you could build your own analog TV capture device with this. There are some problems, as we'll get to in a moment, but this block right there, the VBI slicer, the vertical blanking interval, that handles everything. This chip is kind of crazy. Do I have it here? Well, whatever. So there are other models in this family. The one that I bought has some like debug stuff, some diagnostics. It can handle up to 4 inputs. I don't need that, but so the problem with this, it's a 1.8 volt complementary metal oxide semiconductor. This lead frame chip scale package, as we see, it's this big, 5 millimeters, 32 contacts, I guess 33 with the ground pad. That's fairly cheap. You can do that. And it is literally, if you get the right one, it's 10 to 15 bucks. If you really need to, you can probably fabricate this yourself, but Proto Advantage sells this thing, so if you need it, they'll even order it and solder it for you. I was very happy for someone else to do that the first time. This crystal frequency seems oddly specific. It is a multiple of, I believe, the NTSC color bursts, and then internally the chip is clocked to sample at double that rate anyway, or maybe even more. The problem, though, there's 32 contacts, but we have a line lock clock that tells you when data is ready, and then it expects you to be reading off a byte at a time at 27 megahertz, give or take, depending on how bad the source is and things like that. You need, 2 for the I squared C, you need 1 for the reset, you might need 1 for the power down. There's an alternate power up sequence, and I still want to have an infrared remote just so I can automate things more. So right now things are looking kind of bleak. The ESP32 will not read that fast enough. Raspberry Pi won't read that fast enough. You may even run out of general purpose I/O on the Raspberry Pi. But the other thing, because it's in this ITU, BT is broadcast television, 656 format, you'll basically be reading an entire frame. You get the start of video, you get the end of active video, and then the caption data is called ancillary. It's in this other format, 1364, and it's sent in between the two. So you have to read all the data, throw away most of it, and then get it out before you get to the next frame to have more data come in. It kind of sucked at this point, and this project sat for maybe like 2.5 months. But so here's a little aside. The AI is not helping, aside from being incredibly energy intensive. I've named them Brad, Chad, and Jimmy. If you think about it, you'll probably figure out who those are. I asked, and Google Bard gave me, it looked great. It was confidently wrong. There is no Linux support for the breakout boards or for the evaluation boards. There are no shell scripts. It runs on Windows. This was not good. This was not helpful at all. And I'm sure someone will say like, oh, well, you can use a resource augmented generation or whatever. It's fine. I can read the documentation myself. This is sort of, when you sort of think about things a little bit too much, but here's the wonderful word artifice, which we don't usually use that much anymore, but everything, you call everything artificial, sweeteners, intelligence, etc. You are the one who is the intelligence. You get to ask the questions, you get to use the tool, the tool should not use you, hopefully. And one of the sort of one of the questions I sometimes ask the large language models, which AI is just an optimization problem. It wants to give you an answer. It might be wrong. It doesn't know. Alignment is such a strange word, but you know, just don't put too much into it. I'm not ruling out, you know, machine spirituality, but I would have to have an experience for, to convince me. Like, don't put it too far. But you know, then I feel like this is one of those bell curve memes. But you know, all storytelling is distillation and relaying of information, and you know, you have emotional responses to things, and so you know, like storytelling and narrative, that's what we do as humans. That's how we make sense of the world. So I think I'm so clever here, crapping on AI, but we kind of do it ourselves anyway, all the time. So anyway, so moving forward at the expense of possible failure, but I started assembling the components for this board. It's a little bit frightening when you have fractions of millimeters, but this is a 3.2 by 2.5. It's a standard size for crystals. So of course, in Imperial, the footprint is called 1210. That's thousands of inches, but doesn't mean anything if you've memorized 3.2 by 2.5. So in metric, it's easy. It's 3225. I think 0604 exists in both Imperial and metric, and they're not the same size. So that's exciting. And yes, that's, I don't know, does anyone know how big a penny is? But that's how big crystals are. We don't use pennies. So support your local hackerspace. If you don't have one, you can support ours. But it was very satisfying to put the crystals on this breakout board. I carefully applied the solder paste and then watched it melt all over. But once it gets to the right temperature, it just kind of wicks itself onto the footprints and things align themselves. It's very satisfying, but I probably shouldn't do it just for the fun of watching it. But I think this hot plate's about $100. Weirdly, none of the USB-C power delivery adapters that I plugged in would work, but my battery pack did. So I was melting metal with a battery pack that I carry with me. So finally, here is this madness that last week did not exist, did not work. I'm very glad it did not blow up. I almost did twice. I was working on it late at night. I'm like, oh, all right, yeah, I'll just connect this. It's like, no, don't do that. So over here on the left, we have the ESP32. It's running MicroPython. I did put the infrared LED on there just because I wanted it. It does not work. Getting that working is more complicated than I thought. And you know, package management hell just sort of infects everything. I guess it's only slightly less terrible than handling everything yourself. But I did put two voltage regulators on here. I didn't connect the second one. And it's good to read the documentation. The level shifter, the low side is A. The high side is B, because usually people are stepping up with the microcontrollers. But in this case, because it's a 1.8 volt CMOS, I needed to step down. So I almost blew it up that way too. Right? And the output enable is underneath the board. So those four wires that are covering it, I'm not going to do a Picard impression. Those are the only ones that I need. One of them is so it's 2I2C, the data and the clock. The address least significant bit, and that will shift your address and for your I2C and for other things like user maps and whatever. And then the reset, I could not find out how to do an overbar, so that is the inverted reset. And basically, you can power everything up to 1.8, And then the last thing, you wait, and then you hit the reset, and then you wait another 5-10 milliseconds, and then you can start your I2C. And then here at the bottom, I guess one thing that I forgot, there is a nice calculator to tell you what kind of resistor, it's a damping resistor, and what kind of capacitors to use on the crystal, but it works. I stressed out over it, but it works. And that's just connected to the two pins, the crystal positive, crystal negative. And then over here on the rightmost, that is actually getting your video signal in. There's a capacitor on there to get rid of DC bias. And the two resistors there are about 75 ohms to match, I believe, the impedance of the video signal. I would not have been able to do that without the instructions that are in the datasheet. But so it's amazing. It works. It did not blow up. The level shifter, I almost forgot it. Very important. And I have this little debug connector. So this at least lets me watch the video that's coming in. Although, if you're going to be capturing it, you'd probably want to use the composite for this one. And if it has an S video out, use that to capture the video signal for better quality. So here's all the I2C registers to pull out the vertical blanking data. And it's kind of a mess, but it does this for you. Like, it'll also do, the chip will do NTSC, PAL, CCAM, various, you know, color burst frequencies. It has widescreen signaling detection. It has MacroVision, now Rovi, now probably another company that bought it. It will detect it. It will not remove it for you, but you can just ignore it. It's great. And this is one of several pages of all of the different, it has a built-in deinterlacer, if you wanted to do that, which would make sense if you're connecting it to an LCD screen. So, thing that I sort of skipped over, these chips are, well, they were mostly designed for things like automotive entertainment systems, which, you know, I think, even though this is a revision A of the chip, they pretty much stopped developing it in 2008, because, you know, the analog signal is on the way out. So here you have another thing that, like my VCR from 2004, it's the peak of technology right before it is never used again. But so surprisingly, although maybe not surprisingly, considering I just did a dive, you know, I did a dive into this tiny chip to get, you know, very small pieces of data out, but of an obsolete media format. The Wikipedia page will tell you how to decode all of the captions. It'll give you your positions, your colors, cursor movement, whether you're going to roll up one, two, or three lines, blank the whole thing. One picture that I forgot, now that I realize, you can have more than, you know, one position. So I have a great shot of Mad TV, and they just have, it says Mad in two different places. Considering how long this took to put together, making slides is very tedious, but so there are multiple ways to get your IR codes. They usually are in some sort of family of, you know, signal modulation. You can use a flipper. It has send and receive. And if you're using the command line interface, it'll tell you what it is right there. The Linux infrared command module thing is in the kernel now, so you can start it with a kernel parameter. I think I mentioned that in my last talk, which, now that I'm talking about my last talk, the best part was when I went off script because someone asked a question. You have to try not to, you know, get locked into, oh, I'm making a presentation, I must be boring. So if somebody asked a question, I sort of broke out of that. But I'm sure there's a term for that in acting, but I don't have enough intuition for acting to do that. There's also a component tester that, for whatever reason, they put an infrared LED on it. It tells you your, you know, capacitors, resistors, what kind of transistors you have, and the measurements there are, you know, for each of them. And there are some online databases, although I can't always find them again, which is a little bit strange. So still working on basically everything, but It works, it powers on, it gives me data back. It is a little bit clunky, this is why we write the program. And then the question is, once you have the caption data off the tape, reading everything at the same time, what's the right format for you to be transporting it? I'm thinking I might just do everything in hex and have it parsed on the computer, but ESP32 can probably do a lot of stuff. This is like a play or a program. It is never completed, but it is, occasionally abandoned. So another thought that I had, the TV is an Android TV. It has an analog input. Everything else on there is Android. The live TV app is Android. It's decoding from HDMI, HDTV signals off the antenna. And the same app is doing the analog decoding. So why not just buy your cheapest Android TV, pull the APK off, or find out what chip it is, and write something yourself. Yes, that is it. That's the end. So this was many, many sleepless nights because I had some success with the I2C. So I'm like, yes, I'll submit this talk and have faith that things will come together. But the great thing is that this seems like a really good starting point for anyone else to, you could make your own capture card if you find a chip that's good enough to handle the 27 megahertz at once and, output it to a webcam, but also have maybe, a few serial ports show up on the USB device or things like that. So don't remember what my last two slides are. Okay, that was a good, okay, it's my to-dos. All right, good, I did the to-dos. All right, yes, person I have never met in my life.
Is the time code information stored and recorded here?
I'm not sure, it would depend on the broadcast, but that would be part of the extended data service.
Okay.
There are other things that may not be line 21, they might be somewhere else in the signal I was just talking to someone who forget what station they were working with, but they mentioned that it was on Betacam. They mentioned it was beta. I'm assuming that it was professional beta. And from what they could tell me, I'm thinking that it was more like internal stuff that they used for editing and switching stuff internally, but who knows? It could have been stuff that was going out over the air. I could probably keep talking about interesting things I've seen in the captions, but there was a news program and it had just literally the teleprompter came out over the caption. So they had, who was supposed to be reading it. And then they had a package that they had purchased from National ABC. And so it just kind of stuck that in there, which, if you're watching the news, you assume that it's all from the same source. You don't necessarily pay attention. It is not just people talking to you. It is scripted from start to end. But so any questions? Yes.
I'm wondering about the chip. How well does it handle like bad video signals? If the signal is broken, if it's like got way too much VHS on it, like how does it handle?
I could
repeat the question.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So basically, how good is the chip when the signal is terrible? Again, because this is sort of the pinnacle of the engineering of this thing, it will handle, I don't know if they call them dirty sources, but like weak signals, bad things. There's also a free run mode that you can set it in to like not do things like adaptive contrast enhancement and the reason why the line lock clock does not necessarily run at 27 megahertz is because if there's bad data coming in, it'll try and do, I don't know if it'll do like time code correction or time-based correction, but it will try and make a good frame for you so you can put it to an LCD display or something. So the shorthand is that they're automotive, but that just means like it functions between a certain temperature range and you can it's terrible that I remember exactly. It's the analog devices ADV7282A, and there's others in the same family, but you can look up the the spec sheet, and then the other spec sheet that details all the I squared C stuff you can do. So, yes?
Hi, Ron.
Anywhere in digital form, am I right?
And they might have some signaling. So the Chiron crawl is usually just part of the video signal. It is broadcast out like anything else. I don't know what kind of compositing software they would use to do that. Although, funny thing with cheap HDMI adapters and some OpenCV or other stuff, you can make your own crawling captions. I remember this is even longer ago, but my grandmother's retirement community, she called it the creeper, which might be, vines and not what we would think of today, but, it just had, crawling information along the bottom, and then like bulletin board type screens come up every few seconds. But I'm not aware. I don't have that many recordings of news, but I'm assuming that the Chiron is only video and independent of anything else. But any more questions? Okay. Okay.
What you're doing is capturing the line 21 data, but this same setup could be used to capture the video data as well. You could create a capture device using
this. So this is part of, this chip is, aside from being incredibly small and very low power, you can use it to, build an entire capture card. The problem is reading it at the right speed. But that's what the, let's go back here. So most of these pads are, a lot of them are ground and power. But if you see here, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are in reverse, 0 through 7, that's your byte. You're going to be reading all 8 of those pins at once. And then the LLC at 32 at the top of the chip, that's the line lock clock that tells you, hey, we have new data for you. And you need to be right, you'd probably need to trigger an interrupt or something on the line lock clock and then read all 8 bytes. And it's not, not something I want to deal with, especially with, I don't want to be spending $100 on a microcontroller to do this. And then I have to learn how to program it if it's something weird. So lots of ground pads, lots of digital, there a lot of the positive signals on here are spread out as well. And there is a power-up sequence that was new to me, but they have an alternate where you power on everything, and then when you're done, you bring the reset up. So, all right, thank you. Sorry. I think I saw that a long time ago, but once you have this text, you can do whatever you want with it. Interesting. This guy, Gary D. Robinson, he had something about, if you get a weather report or something, you can send it to your pager or your cell phone or something. It's just like, okay, it is possible once you have that data. So, okay. Thank you.